Good evening and welcome to Music in Maryland. I'm Jonathan Polevsky in Music in Maryland. Well, it's just that, some great concerts and recordings from all over the greater WBJC listening area. That's guitarist Manuel Barrueco, and he is playing music from the Suite Española by Isaac Albéniz. And it is Manuel Barrueco who is the subject of Music in Maryland, because a week from tomorrow, the 21st at Towson at 3 p.m., he's doing a concert celebrating his 50 years, yes, 50 years on the stage. We sat down for an extended interview, and we'll play some of his recordings, and we'll listen to some of his many experiences he's had from the 70s till now. It's an extraordinary thing. But first, how about a little bit more Albéniz, since Manuel Barrueco was born in Cuba? How about Cuba from the Suite Española by Isaac Albéniz, arranged by Manuel Barrueco and performed by him on Music in Maryland on WBJC? Thank you. Sunday, April 21st at 3 p.m. at Towson University, guitarist Manuel Barrueco will be celebrating 50 years on the stage with the Baltimore Classical Guitar Society. Welcome. It's great to see you.
Thank you. Nice to see you, too.
I remember many of these years, and I remember this starts in the 70s, if I remember correctly, around the time of my bar mitzvah.
Yeah.
A long time ago. Well, first, congratulations. What a milestone.
I guess so. Yeah, thank you, I guess.
So
I'd rather be like 20 years.
True.
But I'll take it for sure.
When I think of some of the great touring virtuosi, and you got a tour, there's no way you can, yeah. You know, I mean, even if you live in the biggest city in the world, you still have to tour. It takes a certain kind of person to do this. What do you think it takes to spend your life, a lot of it, on the road?
Well, actually, on the one side, I'm, you know, traveling around the world, you know, making music, I mean, it's not the worst thing that one could do. On the other hand, it is difficult if you have a family and you have kids. That's the difficulty, you know, and having to live out of a suitcase for a long time. But I think, at least in my case, you know, I think I just did it because I loved it. I sort of have a similar mindset that I guess came from Segovia, the idea of doing something for the instrument and trying to do the best thing for it. And you know, that's what I tried to do. By the way, Jonathan, you know, something that may sound strange to some people, but I never decided that this was what I was going to do. At least I don't remember. Because since I was a kid, this is what I was going to do. Clearly naive as a child, but that's what I thought I was going to do.
Right from the get-go. In Cuba, you believed that I'm going to be a traveling virtuoso guitarist?
Well, I don't know if I believed that I was going to be a great virtuoso, but that this is what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to do this.
At this point in your career, people emulate you and you're a source of inspiration for other musicians, but who are the musicians who inspired you along a long journey of many decades?
I was greatly influenced by Alicia de la Rocha, the pianist for Spanish music, and Gustav Leonhardt for the harpsichord. I mean, I always listened to a lot of, you know, great musicians. I tell my students, you know, make sure you listen to good ones, you know. Those are particularly important to me. Now, as far as guitar playing, you know, I remember being in a festival in France. It was an outdoors French, and I was walking towards a concert. It was Paco Lucía playing outdoors, and I remember the power of the playing. You know, it was just like it was just hitting you in the chest, and thinking, "Oh, I want some of that." And I loved Chick Corea.
Mm-hmm.
I loved him. You know, he's a musician, but I guess the biggest influence, now that I think about it, it was Takemitsu. It was Taro Takemitsu. I didn't know how to use colors in the guitar. And through his music and working with him, I found a way to use the colors with the instrument. And the man himself, I mean, I think he was a great man. And for some reason, he liked me and he advised me. And speaking of highlights, one of the greatest experiences I ever had was doing the premiere of his To the Edge of Dream for guitar and orchestra with Seiji Ozawa and the Boston Symphony. To me, that was just an incredible highlight. I mean, I consider myself, you know, incredibly lucky to have been able to do that.
Sid Ozawa just passed, and you were remembering like what rehearsals were like with him, and so what was that experience like?
That was amazing, also, because when I went in for the rehearsals, I was told that Ozawa had had a bad experience with the guitarist, and he swore he would never play with the guitarist again. Right? And Takemitsu told me that he had to convince him, you know, to play with me. I said, you can play with him. So when I went in, what I decided to concentrate on, that I guess his expectations were so low, but I was totally starstruck. The most interesting story had to do with amplification. Takemitsu wanted amplification, Ozawa did not want amplification. We go into the rehearsal, they had a team. When I played the first note, it was really loud, and Ozawa got all angry and called the people from the sound at the edge of the stage, and he was just yelling at them, and they were fired on the spot for that. From that, I learned one thing, which is if you're going to use amplification, begin from nothing or from very low. Don't do that. And then they hire another team. That seemed to be okay. And we were going to do an amplification right before the concert. So I was like, no amplification.
You went to Peabody in the early 70s and studied with Aaron Shearer. Did you learn a lot there, or was this just a matter of sort of polishing what you already had?
No, actually, it changed the way I played. I would say that the most important thing that I learned from working with Shearer was to learn to think about things and to try to rationalize things. Before that, it was basically just by imitation, without much thought behind what I did. And with him, whether it was the musical score, how to play the instrument, he had thought about all these things, you know. I think that was the biggest influence. Often we didn't agree with things, but he forced me, because of that, I had to think about it. And for example, more specific in guitar playing, you know, as far as the guitar, he was like a three-stroke player, or a teacher, I should say. He felt that there was a basic stroke of the instrument. I think he was right. I had never really developed that. Even very famous guitarists, if you think about Segovia, for example, you know, his sound was a rest stroke, but his free stroke was nothing. And especially as he got older, it was nothing. So because of that, I thought it was important or necessary to develop a free stroke to the level as close as possible to the rest stroke.
What was it like to be a student at Peabody with people like Leon Fleischer as a teacher, and then to be on faculty at Peabody with colleagues like Leon Fleischer.
Yeah, well, I always admired him very much, and I actually asked him for advice a couple of times. I'll tell you one story. I forget what I asked him, but the answer that he gave me was that, well, you know, the Baltimore Symphony, they have auditions for young players, you know, and at that time it was Comisiona. So you could audition for them. I guess I was, sounds like I was asking him about opportunities, you know. So I auditioned for the symphony, for the Comisiona. I said that already, was the conductor back then. So when I saw Fleischer again, I told him I did the audition. And he said, well, how did it go? And I said, it didn't go very well. I said, well, were you impressed with your play? And I said, well, no. He said, well, if you were not impressed with your play, you should not expect anybody else to be, impressed with your playing. And that's something that even today I use sometimes with students. My admiration for him really was such, I basically couldn't talk in front of him. We were doing, for example, the artist diploma juries, and I was with him, and I just couldn't talk around him.
He said to me one time, the secret to life and success is re-engagement.
Yes, I heard that. Actually, I didn't finish the story.
Ah.
I did play with the symphony. So even though I wasn't impressed with it, Commissioner did hire me. And we played a concert in Frederick, I think, you know. And I remember the second floor on the front, standing up applauding, was Leon Fleischer.
Aww.
He was there at the concert. And he was always very nice to me. Every time that I encountered him, he was always very warm.
You're playing no lack of classical guitar favorites and standards on this program, but you're also playing music by the American composer Lou Harrison that you've recorded and whose music I really love.
For the people that know Lou Harrison, I mean, I think he started with Schoenberg, and he did a lot of things very modern, and then he also wrote pieces like this that's based on I think, Indonesian music that is very exotic for us, but beautiful. Nowadays, it's kind of in style for a lot of players, guitarists, you know, to do programs that jump around all styles back and forth, you know, begin with modern and then go to classical, you know. I believe that the beginning point of a program should be that, or an important part of a program is that it should develop as it goes on. One easy way would be if one goes through the periods, I mean, the music will evolve, you know, will we get more interesting harmonically and so on, except for the Harrison. That's in the middle, in the middle of it to begin the second part. But then it connects to the other two pieces, to the Tarriga pieces and the Turina, because they have also this, you know, Moorish sound to them. So for us also, it's kind of exotic in the same way as the Harrison is. Thank you.
So if you're in this business for so many decades, people like me are going to ask you the obvious question, and I'm going to ask it, what's changed for the guitar and for music between now and the 1970s?
A lot has changed in the music world, not only with the guitar. I think we have some really great players now out there that are, I think, better and more interesting musicians than what we had in the past, in my opinion. For example, even with the society, you know, Lukasz Kuropaczewski is coming, and he's really an amazing player. And or you mentioned Meng and, you know, the Beijing duo. I mean, it's just, I don't think it gets any more beautiful than that. I think in the past, every player has some sort of weakness somewhere. But when you hear some of these people, it's just, if there's a weakness, I'm not sure what it is. The repertoire has expanded. I think Bream had a lot to do with it. He opened up this great repertoire from England and other places. And now we have pieces written by important composers from all countries in the U.S. There's a lot of music has been written. Carter, for example, David Carter, and clearly Britain and Walton in England, and Hensa in Germany, and Takemitsu in Japan, Hinastera. I think by now the repertoire that we have, I think it's pretty substantial. But I think a lot of young players feel like they have to present new things. And I think sometimes they're not careful to keep the quality there. I think quality is important, that it's not only new, but it's something all good, there's something new not so good. So.
If you're just tuning in, my guest is guitarist Manuel Barrueco, who is celebrating 50 years on stage, and he'll be doing a recital with the Baltimore Classical Guitar Society Sunday at Towson, April 21st at 3 p.m. You can find out more information at bcgs.org. And we have the pleasure of a nice chat with Manuel Barrueco. So tell me, what about you and the guitar? What's changed with you and the guitar on a physical, maybe a spiritual level even?
I tell you how it has changed for me, the guitar, you know, after all this time. I love it more than ever before because of its limitations, you know. We question about the guitars and instruments, but the thing is, it's the beauty of it. I read one time Rostropovich say he loved the cello because of its limitations and the orchestra because of its perfection. Mm-hmm. I think the guitar can be such a beautiful instrument, you know. The feelings that the instrument can express is really beautiful. I love music also more now than ever before. It means more to me. It can more easily bring me to tears than ever before. For example, with Bach, I remember reading about another cellist, Pablo Casals, talking about how I think it was the first thing that he would do in the morning was play Bach. Now I understand that. I think Bach's music is, for me, it's become, and I hate to say this word because I think it's not pretentious, but it's glorious. I think it can be just that, all the things that it expresses.
The fifth cello suite or third lute suite that you're playing, is it your arrangement?
it's a lute version, so it's minor, minor things. I do change some of the voicings, you know, because sometimes it goes too low for the for the guitar. But,
Yeah, it's a great piece, especially.
It's a beautiful. Yeah, and also, you know, Jonathan, since he was such a religious man, when I play his music, I feel like I'm overhearing his conversation with God. And maybe that's where the glory comes in, because that's what he was thinking, you know.
Well, he was a maximalist. It was never enough. Like, nothing was ever enough. If you could put more in it, more counterpoints, more brilliance, more ideas, more, you know. And I think that he's working for someone, and he's working for God. God is his employer. And it's never, even as great as it is, it's never good enough. There's always something more to be done. Had he lived past 65, he would have continued to his very last day to create. Yeah. He's a remarkable, remarkable man. You have a substantial recorded legacy that goes all the way back to Vox Recordings in the 1970s, which I remember well, which have been reissued on CD. You have a great recorded legacy, a diverse recorded legacy. Any favorites that you'd like to talk about?
One record that I have a lot of affection for is called Some Time Ago. And it had music by Lou Harrison. Lou Harrison's in it, but also Chick Corea, which I mentioned before, and even a couple of Paul Simon songs in it. And I think there's something magical about that repertoire, the way it works. I think I mentioned another one, maybe the Bach sonatas, the violin sonatas. I think there's something about that as well. And
I remember that tour. Yeah. That was Bach and Devise. I would add the Cuba album to the albums of favorites. I would add that. I know you have a somewhat tortured relationship with your homeland in some ways.
Because the government,
but not the people.
And not
but
its culture either.
Yes, exactly.
No. I think that's an interesting record because it shows the music from a place that is, you know, it's not a main place for classical music, and that's where some interesting things were happening. So the pieces are, they're not bad. And there are a couple, there are actually some good pieces and some beautiful music in there as well. But, you know, most of my recordings, if not all, there is some idea behind them. So like the Albanese Granados, it may not sound like much right now, but back then when I did it, you never saw in any recording that I know of or performance or concert more than one or two pieces by Albanese Granados. That was it. So to all of a sudden have an LP where one side was all from the suite by Albanese and the other one in the other side was all Granados dances, that was really different at that time. And then later people like Brain did both of those things, the Granados and that. So that was unique back then.
But unlike Elisa de la Rocha, who just has to play the music, you have to transcribe these things and maybe change them a little bit because of past abuses, maybe musically.
I wanted to modernize the way in which they had been transcribed because the transcriptions by Jobet, for example, were extremely free, even to the point that some mentions they were just basically improvising what happened there. So I wanted to be more faithful to the text. Also the Cuban thing, even some time ago, my idea was Life magazine used to have this thing about a day in the life of America. And I saw it's sort of a tribute to my new country to have only American composers of different styles, you know, in it. They all have some sort of idea behind it.
The Rodrigo Concierto de Aranjuez is just such an important part of the repertoire of any concert guitarist. Do you remember the first time you played it?
I do, because it was a bit of a disaster. I was actually a student here at Peabody. I forget what years, maybe third year or so. And I just got a phone call from the New Jersey Symphony to play it. And it was kind of short notice, so I did. And I don't have too fond memories, so I don't know how it went, but I remember being extremely nervous.
Mm. And a favorite performance? I know you recorded it with Placido Domingo for EMI.
Yeah, that was pretty amazing.
That was good.
I mean, just to work with him, like, you know, again, starstruck, you know, with him. And actually, if you hear the recording, you can hear him singing in the orchestral part. That's the way he conducted it, the way he would sing it. That night when we recorded, I think at 5 p.m. we still didn't know what was going to happen, and it was going to be like at 11 because he had some function in Washington. He was going to fly to New York in a place called the Hit Factory. We're going to record there. And all of a sudden I get a call like 8 o'clock in New York. So I go there. That's where we did the songs. We sat down and I just played introduction. I heard that voice. I mean, I couldn't believe what I was hearing there. And it was also interesting because we were sitting like you and I right now just in front of each other, but his voice was overwhelming the microphone, so they had to put some glass between us. Sometimes people don't realize that some of those recordings, you know, you meet the artist there for the first time in the studio and you do it. When we did the Rodrigo, you just like ran through it and then recorded. Or Manuel Paul was like that. You meet, you play one time, you know. And the songs were like that. So there were some that they were flexible. They were a bit complicated to put together and I just couldn't quite follow it. So I tell him, if you conduct as you're saying, I will follow you then. And that's what we did. I don't think he had seen the songs before. I don't think he even knew what it was going to be, you know. So we take the song, and the first time sounds okay. The second time sounds pretty good. The third time sounds amazing. It sounded like he had sang it his whole life. I was really impressed with that.
La palmera supiera que el niño en cuna tan bella caído sería una estrella su abanico le tendiera para que el niño meciera del monte por la ladera que alegre va el pastorcillo montado en su borriquillo corre que el niño te espera y escorta la noche buena en vele la virgen pura le reza al niño que espera canta la Virgen María, el niño le sonreía, qué triste está la palmera, si la palmera supiera lo que espera.
So before I let you go, you've been on faculty at Peabody for a long time. Any message to your students?
Well, what I tell them is to be honest in their playing, to really try to play what they feel, to go deep inside of them for that, because some things mature well, you know, some things become wine, some just remain grape, you know. Grapes. And I tell them that they manage to express what is inside them as they grow and they mature, their music will change with it. And it will be beautiful just to see the changes, you know, as they happen.
And for the future? Well, any projects, anything you've been just dying to do forever that you really want to do that you haven't done? There isn't much you haven't done
in
the guitar world.
There are things I wanted to do that I don't know that I'm going to get to. I think I mentioned this to you. I wanted to do the Hense Sonatas, mm-hmm. both of them, and I don't know if I'm going to get to that. That's the one thing that comes to mind, mm-hmm. just mm-hmm. To do that.
It's a challenge.
That's something that I would do for myself. I love his music. The Britain something, the Nocturnal, but I play it already, so it's just a matter of just working it up and do it because I feel like I have a particular vision of the piece that I would like to record. Yeah.
Well, this is on the 21st, 3 p.m. at Towson. Very lovely program. Manuel Barrueco celebrating 50 years on stage from 1974 to now. Congratulations.
Thank you, John. Thank you very much.
Thank you for giving us some time. We really appreciate it. If you'd like more information about the concert, you can go to bcgs.org, Baltimore Classical Guitar Society. Once again, it's a week from tomorrow at Towson University at 3 p.m. Let's enjoy guitarist Manuel Barrueco in music by Rodrigo. We talked a little bit about the Concierto de Aranjuez, and we will hear him joined by the Philharmonia Orchestra. Placido Domingo conducts, and Manuel Barrueco is our guitar soloist on Music in Maryland here on WBJC.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.